Hello, and welcome to Series 2, Episode 3 of the LGC News Roundup podcast. My name's Martin George. I'm Deputy Editor of the LGC. Really pleased to be joined today by Kirsty Weekly, our Head of Content. Hi, Kirsty.
Hi, Martin.
And Megan Kenyon, our Senior Reporter. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Martin.
Great. Thanks for being with us today. First things first, Megan, did you get tickets for Taylor Swift?
I did, yes.
Good.
I did.
I asked that purely so we can put Taylor Swift in the description of this podcast on Spotify and we'll get millions more listeners than usual.
There might be more Taylor Swift coming up later.
No. Yeah. That's the end of the Taylor Swift. I'm sure that it won't come up again later. No. And let's just hope Taylor Swift fans love local government pensions chat as well, so they'll have a good time. As usual, we're going to have a bit of a kick around some of the big stories of the past 7 days in the local government world. And first one, let's talk about a new government body called the Office for Local Government. We've mentioned it a couple of times before on previous podcasts. It's a new thing the government is setting up to bring together data about how councils perform, the idea being it'll help you flag up earlier any problems that might need to be addressed. But it's not universally welcomed in the sector. But Megan, I know there's been a bit of a new development this week and we've had more reaction from some quite senior people in the sector. Talk us through what's been going on.
Yeah, so obviously last week at the LGA conference in Bournemouth, Michael Gove officially launched the Office for Local Government. We'd expected it would come kind of in the week before the conference, but of course it came right as Michael Gove was giving his speech. So yeah, I think it was very hotly anticipated by the sector because I think up until this point it's been kind of unclear exactly what Oflog's role is. I think it is still, you know, sort of unclear, and that's kind of been what people in the sector have been saying and kind of how they've been reacting to it. I mean, I think the strongest bit of reaction we got on shortly after Oflog's launch was from Sam Chapman-Allen, the chair of the District Councils Network, who said that there is a long way to go before Oflog it can show it is really adding value. I think he was basically talking about, as part of Oflog's launch, there has been a new, what's called the Local Authority Data Explorer, which allows residents, government officials, councillors to basically explore how councils are performing on four different service areas. So adult social care, waste management, finance and adult skills. And I think Councillor Chapman-Allen was basically saying that, you know, these metrics aren't quite as full as they could be yet. So there's still a long way to go because, you know, those are only four areas that councils perform in. And I think there has been some criticism that, you know, the data that is being recorded, it doesn't quite accurately reflect council performance. In the way that I think councillors would like it to, but yeah.
And I know you've been sort of playing around with some of the data and just trying to look for yourself how it looks like, how it works. I mean, is it user-friendly from what you've seen? Do you think that members of the public, other councils, will find what's on the public website there useful?
I mean, I don't think it isn't useful, but I don't think
that's not massive praise, is it?
Yeah, no, I don't think it is as useful as it could be. I think that the interface is very, it feels a little bit basic and a little bit, well, basic to look at, but a little bit difficult to kind of assess. Okay, so my council, for example, Islington, where does Islington sit in relation to all other councils? You know, that data is there. It's just not quite, it's not particularly easy to work out that metric, basically. And for example, you know, my home council, Westmorland and Furness, only been up and running since the 1st of April, but I couldn't actually see where it sits because there's no data yet on the new unitary councils, which I thought was interesting. So
they kind of get off the hook for the first year or two of them in existence almost.
Yeah.
I think think the other thing that struck me was that this sort of focus on the you know, how far your council is from the median doesn't tell you that much if the whole sector is performing really badly or really well on a certain metric.
Yeah.
You don't, you know, actually what you want to know is, are they meeting the standards they want to meet?
I mean, I think you gave a really good example in the office, didn't you? If the entire sector is going bankrupt, the median council could be going bankrupt. That doesn't mean it looks okay. But on the sort of Offlog website, you think, oh, right, my council's near the middle. It's fine. So interesting point. Yeah.
Not that we suspect all councils are about to go bankrupt.
No.
There'll be an emergency podcast when that happens. And Kirsty, Adam Lent, a big thinker in local government. He's the chief exec of the new local think tank. He's brimming with enthusiasm for Offlog. Is that fair to say?
Not quite. He wrote quite a scathing briefing for LTC yesterday, actually, suggesting that Offlog's approach is delusional and devoid of any strategic or historical context, that it borders on dishonest.
Marvellous.
His words, not ours. So yeah, there's quite a lot of scepticism around about it. And other ideas about how it could be used in the future, isn't there, Martin?
Yeah, so I published an opinion piece from Nick Forbes, who used to be the leader of the Labour group at the Local Government Association. And he was writing about something completely different. And just in an offhand paragraph near the bottom of the article, he says, oh, yeah, we think we need a better framework for scrutinising and holding to account combined authorities. Maybe that's what this new organisation, Offlog, could do. And that's probably the first of many examples we'll see where people think, well, something else we need in local government sphere. Let's bolt that onto Offlog. Offlog could do that. And I think that's the kind of mission creep that the sector's worried about. I mean, comprehensive framework scrutiny of combined authorities probably fits fairly naturally in what it might be doing anyway. But I think we'll see more and more things that are perhaps less to be welcomed by the sector.
It kind of seems like Offlog it's got a long way to go before it's sort of fully functioning in the way that, you know, I don't want to say the way that it was intended, because I don't know whether actually the government's full intentions for what it will end up operating as are actually there. I think it's kind of seems to be going with the flow more than it's appeared as this fully formed new office. You know, it seems like it's sort of incrementally going to become something, but we don't really know what. So
not quite sure what. Moving on to a completely different topic, and I'm going to hand over the chair's microphone to Kirsty, because I believe you want to talk to me about this one.
Yes, because you're our expert in this area, and it's been a big week for the Chancellor Jeremy Hunt, who announced a whole raft of financial reforms. So what does this really mean for local government?
Good question. This is something that I've been at LGC for just under 4 years, and this consultation on the local government pension scheme has been imminent for 4 years. So to finally see it come through this week was quite exciting for people like me who like local government pensions. The big picture, I mean, not to go into the boring detail, but local government pension scheme, it's worth £369 billion. That's more than the GDP of some EU countries. So it's got a huge financial clout. The government's concern is that all that money isn't being used to invest in things like new British companies or big infrastructure or net zero projects, that as well as making money to pay pensions, could also do a bit of good for levelling up or help the British economy. So Jeremy Hunt's kind of idea is to accelerate an existing scheme in the LGPS, and that's to try and more consolidation. So at the moment, the pension scheme, it's split between like 86 different little funds, and the government's saying we want them much more in not ceasing to exist, but becoming members of 8 pooling organisations that then gather together all their assets and can invest them en masse. And then you can get, you know, bigger scale investment to do the things the government wants it to do.
Does the sector think this is a good idea?
The sector's split on this one, I'll be honest. The big concern that people have is that the primary duty, many would say the only real duty of the pension scheme, is to make enough money to pay pensions for the 6 million local government workers, past and present. And if the government's saying, oh, actually, no, it's a piggy bank we want to use to fund all our priorities like levelling up and, you know, investing in, you know, small companies, well, that's risky. That could lose money. That could mean the pension fund starting to have less money, and then it's council taxpayers will have to put more money in to fill any black holes that, you know, appear in 10 years, 20 years. So it's a consultation. I think we've got 3 months of people to really kick the tyres and put their views in. But I think the government's clearly trying to have more consolidation in this scheme. And it's something that, you know, some of the individual pension funds that haven't contributed yet their assets, will we see judicial reviews? Will we see, you know, very strongly worded objections? It's an open question.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely one that we'll be, or you will be, keeping a close eye on.
Very carefully. That's me, not you. Tackling that local government pension scheme coverage. Thank you, Kirsty.
Yes, I have plenty of other things to keep me busy. And with that, I'll pass you back the chairs, Mike.
Great, thank you. Now, a big running theme that's going to go on for years, Megan, is that the COVID inquiry. We're still on module one, but we had a key local government witness late last week.
Yes, so Professor Jim McManus, who is the president of the Association of Directors of Public Health, who I think featured very prominently on the telly during the pandemic, appeared before the COVID inquiry last week. So, yes, Professor McManus was questioned on the role of directors of public health and sort of how that all tied into pandemic preparedness, and particularly sort of in the early weeks and months of the pandemic. And I think, you know, his sort of resounding message was that there was a lack of understanding in some government departments of the role of directors of public health, but also local authorities more generally. And I think, you know, this really showed in the fact that some departments didn't seem to have read their own guidance on the role of directors of public health and how they should engage with them. And some didn't even have mailing lists so they could reach out to all directors of public health kind of at once. So there just seems to be a lack of communication. I mean, the headline sort of response, or the headline from Professor McManus's evidence that was picked up in most places was that DPH has basically found out about the change of guidance at the same time as everyone else on the 5 p.m. briefing, which obviously contributed to the way that we went into the pandemic and our preparedness for it. And just, I think, you know, the lack of communication just created chaos, basically. But I think, you know, it won't surprise people in the sector to have heard his evidence, because I think, you know, it was very much an experience of a lot of people in local government. But yeah, I thought it was, you know, even to hear it again, it's still pretty shocking, isn't it? To find out about a change in policy that directly affects your job on a 5 p.m. briefing. It's not great.
And it kind of matters, doesn't it? Because I mean, one thing that I suspect the inquiry will hear when it moves to the pandemic itself is that actually the government tried to do a lot of things sanctuarily, like, say, test and trace and vaccine rollout. And some of these things only really worked when they then went to the local level and to councils and directors of public health. So it's a key point of that, a possible failure in planning and preparation, if government departments just didn't know what DPHs did and couldn't contact them in some cases.
Yeah, well, I remember sort of during the first lockdown, reading several articles, I wasn't at LGC at the time, about how, you know, with test and trace, councils already had infrastructure to do that in place. For example, around sexually transmitted infections, and also I think norovirus as well. Mm. So the infrastructure was in place there to be able to do some sort of test and trace. Yes, not for a coronavirus, because, you know, that's something that I think will come out of the inquiry, is that we never properly prepared for a coronavirus. But, you know, still, those are tools that could then be refashioned to be used for tracking COVID. So
yeah, it was this starting from scratch at the centre rather than having an awareness of what could be adapted.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think, I mean, when people hear this podcast, I think we'll have had another key local government witness will have given their evidence. Mark Lloyd, Chief Executive of the Local Government Association.
I think he's just started giving evidence as we speak, I think.
Yep, 2
p.m. on Wednesday. Obviously, I don't have that screen up.
Yeah, but I mean, again, I think that'll be a key figure whose evidence will be listened to really carefully by Lady Hallett and her team. So we'll see next week, no doubt, talk about what he has to say.
Yeah, and obviously there'll be full coverage on LGC's website.
Yeah, absolutely. Nicely plugged.
Can't
well
wait
done, Kirsty.
Podcast.
Absolutely. Now, another thing, we talked about some things being in the national headlines. Another one's been in the national headlines has been the illegal migration bill and all this battle between the House of Commons and the House of Lords. Another bill that's more important for local government is in a sort of similar process, perhaps, the Levelling Up and Regeneration Bill. It's currently in the House of Lords, isn't it? And it's at its report stage, which is getting towards the end of when the House of Lords has sort of done with it and throws it back at the House of Commons. What do we need to know?
Yeah, so if we start with sort of a quick recap of what the Levelling Up and Regeneration Bill actually is, because it's quite a big, meaty bill that was announced just over a year ago that will bring in quite a lot of planning reform, changes to devolution, changes to various bits and pieces like charging a premium on council tax for second homes that council are quite looking forward to, as well as enshrining the 12 levelling up missions in law, which is a bit vaguer. And so it's at the report stage in the House of Lords at the moment, which is sort of one of the last points where you can make significant changes to what's in the bill and how it will work. And there's quite a lot of amendments down to be discussed over the 4 parliamentary sessions they've got booked for it.
I mean, we're talking hundreds and hundreds, aren't we?
I think it's around 150. But
okay. A hundred and a half. Yeah.
but the way they speak in the Lords, you know, last night's session started at 2 o'clock and finished at 10 p.m. I didn't watch the whole thing because, as you might imagine, I had to eat and sleep.
But changes were made, weren't they, against the government's wishes?
Yeah, so the government was on. So on 5 of those amendments that were being discussed yesterday, the government was defeated. The Lords who introduced those amendments forced them to a vote and won narrow votes on. They're probably not the biggest, most contentious parts of the bill. It's things like adding a point around child poverty into the levelling up missions, forcing the government to bring forward the third round of the Levelling Up Fund with the reforms to it around how funding generally works. So it's and they were narrow victories, you know, sort of a handful of votes in it. You can read it all in great detail on the website.
I guess the key question, I mean, do you think the government is going to try and reverse these changes when it goes back to the House of Commons?
I mean, that's often what happens. The government doesn't like having its work marked, and says, and the response from the minister, Miss Scott at the time, during yesterday's debate was, we don't think these amendments are necessary. So the government could just take them out and throw it back at the Lords. But if they just want to get the legislation passed, and they might, they've got a lot of legislation that they need to pass. You've already mentioned the immigration bill that's at the centre of a lot of discussion and debate, and the Levelling Up Bill needs to go through for the East Midlands devolution deal to be able to take effect in time for a mayor to be elected next spring. So yeah. I think I'm not gonna put my reputation out on them and predict what they're gonna do.
But it's, I mean, looking at amendments that are going to be coming up in the next few days worth of debate, there's one that's maybe slightly mischievous from one Lord, wanting to get rid of all these alternative titles for these new elected mayors or whatever they want to be called. So The common bill, they could be called elected mayors, county commissioners, county governors, elected leaders, governors, or a title that someone considers more appropriate. Now, one lord saying, actually, that's just really confusing for members of the public. Let's get rid of all that nonsense. Let's just call them, you know, elected mayors. If that got through in places like Norfolk and Suffolk, they really don't want to have a mayor of Suffolk, a mayor of Norfolk. And that little bit of terminology could be a bit of a stumbling block.
Yeah, it really could. And there's loads and loads of amendments going through. One that the sector might want to have a close watch on is one about virtual meetings.
Obviously,
it's been 2 years since the government had its call for evidence about whether or not council should be allowed to have virtual meetings. It's something that the LGA and others have been pushing the government on, asking for a return to virtual meetings as a way to make being a councillor more accessible to anyone who's got a day job or family life that doesn't always mean they can get to the town hall for a specific time.
Especially in rural areas with big distances, you know, to travel to a meeting.
Yeah, so it's something that worked during COVID. I think there's the evidence that it did work okay. It's we're recording this podcast virtually today. And we do lots of things virtually, and there is you know, it is nice to meet in person, but I think I think that's one that the sector should but again, whether or not the government would let that amendment slip through is hard to say, because they haven't really acknowledged the repeated calls to reinstate that ability. So
yeah, absolutely. And then just to bring things to a close, social media, the whole sort of social media landscape has been upended the last week with Mark Zuckerberg launching Threads, which is basically Twitter without Elon Musk, as far as I can work out. We've talked already, I guess, about how local government comms is really important. I mean, just think of the pandemic. Should local government be shifting from Twitter, or in addition to Twitter, to Threads? Is it? What have you guys been noticing?
Yeah, well, I think we've all joined. I haven't seen like a wholesale shift from Twitter to Threads. At the moment, a lot of people are cross-posting, so they're posting the same things on Twitter and Threads. Which is sort of duplication of work.
It does seem like people are a lot nicer on Threads.
Yeah, it is slightly reminiscent of Twitter back in the early days, which Megan, you might be too young to remember.
But I mean, I've been sort of people might find this themselves, but there's a blog that Essex County Council run, and their sort of comms team, you know, batting around ideas about, you know, what's AI going to do for local government. And they've had one on Threads and whether councils should take it up or not. Lots of interesting questions there. But I guess one is, you know, if a council's audience is shifting from LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram and joining Threads, councils kind of have to be where their audience is to get information across. And I guess it's one way, because it's such a new thing, they're going to have to be really nimble in adapting to how the culture of Threads and what the audience kind of wants to consume there, what information it wants. So it's one way, there'll have to be a lot of quick thinking and quick adaptation there.
Yeah, and I think it's evolving really quickly as well, because a lot of experienced social media users are joining Threads and saying, we don't really know how this works. Is it Twitter? Is it Instagram? Everyone's figuring out their own voice on that platform as we go. So I quite like that sort of experimental. See how we go vibe about it at the moment.
Check out LGC's Threads account, which is at LGC+. So
absolutely. Also, do read our stories on lgcplus.com, and do follow us on that old thing called Twitter at lgcplus. If you like the podcast, do leave us a review, do subscribe to it. Thank you for the tweets and emails we have had over the week with feedback and, you know, some nice words about it. We always appreciate that. And we will see you again next week. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thanks.